Welcome to Painting Corners, your weekly podcast for all things baseball. Now, here are your hosts, Austin Hartsfield and Dave Kwiatkowski.
One of the weirdest signings of the offseason so far, in my opinion, and I think in your opinion too, was Garrett Richards. This is a guy coming off of Tommy John surgery. What are your thoughts on that? We talked about bringing in veterans that were going to stunt the growth of these young pitchers. Is this the case here, do you think, with that? Or what do you think about the signing?
Yeah, the signing was a little curious. You know, he's not going to pitch all of 2019, so I don't think he's going to necessarily stunt this evaluation period that the team's currently on. Great young pitcher. Well, not going to be young anymore, but decent upside. Mid to top of the rotation type of pitcher. I don't know. It's kind of head-scratching because, again, that comes back to Major League evaluation of talent, which kind of is a bugaboo for this team. Would anybody else really offer him that type of money, or was anybody else really in Garrett Richards ready to sign him? I mean, usually a player like that would go a full offseason and next winter would have some demand, but I don't know. It's only money, right?
It's only money, but it was money that you didn't have to spend this year. And I was like, he's not going to pitch the entirety of the season.
Yeah.
So you're just going to hand him $7 million? I mean,
and this is a team that got burned by Josh Johnson twice too. So I don't know. I really don't know. I don't know what they're thinking. Again, their moves that they make with major league talented player or major league talent can be head scratching. Their forte, their expertise is evaluating young players who people don't really know much about and getting a good feel on them. Now, I don't know what the excuse is. We got Dave Cameron now working from Fangraphs, working in the front office now. I don't understand why. I don't know. I mean, it's tough to critique this move. Maybe he comes on in 2020 and has a great season for the team. But then you're looking at he's going to be a free agent. So you just bought him for potentially maybe he comes back. I really don't know. I don't have any explanation for this other than it's only money, right?
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to say his name at least 20 more times before this is over. This is the same team that traded an injured Drew Pomeranz for pieces. Like, and shout out to AJ Preller, by the way, because we talked about this Garrett Richards thing. We're like, why would he do this? And then he's the same person that traded Fernando Tatis for James Shields. So,
yeah. Again, but that's evaluating young players that not many people have information on and being spot on your judgment of them. And there's some moves that he's made that just are just, I don't know. I don't want to say too much because I get in trouble, but it's not an exact science. I mean, being a baseball general manager is not an exact science.
There's one of the hardest things to do.
Yeah, there's plenty of moves that every franchise has made that have been bad. So that's just the nature of the beast. As a fan, you're going to point out to things like that.
Being a baseball GM is the hardest thing to do in sports, in my opinion, because you have so many players. Many players, and you have to have information on everyone. I know that you have a farm director, and I know you have all these assistants, but at the end of the day, it comes on your shoulders. And you have to make sure that you're making the correct decision despite what the people around you are thinking. And when you have so many decisions to make, you're obviously going to mess up every now and then. I mean, the Red Sox went from Theo Epstein, who is considered to be one of the greatest GMs of all time, if not the best in the sport, to Ben Charrington, you know? I mean, you go from one extreme to the other. And then you have Dave Dombrowski, I mean, a guy who in his career has gone from one extreme to the other. But we'll go ahead and blow right past that one. Who else fills out this rotation on opening day? It is just a mixed bag, and there's so much talent.
Yeah, there is a lot of left-handed talent in the rotation for this team. I would think that Lauer, Lucchesi, and Strom would all make the team in the starting rotation. Strom is probably a question mark at this point, but he's had an offseason where he was able to work fully on his strength and his legs and stuff. He had some issues last season where he didn't feel he was fully at full strength with his legs. Great young left-handed pitcher, has a lot of ability, numerous amount of pitches, great secondary. Those three are my prediction. There's also Jacob Nix. You have a Brett Kennedy. You have a Luis Perdomo. You have a Brian Mitchell. There's a lot of question marks. So I don't know what they're going to do in that regard. A lot of them are young pitchers. You would think that at some point they're going to have to sign one pitcher who can get to 180, 190, 200 innings just to take some pressure off of these young guys, because I don't know if they want Lauer and Lucchese and those guys eclipsing the 200 inning mark at this point, this early in their career, when there's really no need to. And then you have guys like Paddock, Quantrill, Logan Allen, who are on the knocking on the door, who could be up or should be up at some point in 2019 as well. So there's a lot of young players, a lot of young pitchers to assess with this team.
And, you know, you went through that whole, like, first minute without even mentioning Quantrill. You know, and guys like, I mean, you didn't even have to mention, I mean, obviously Patino's far away. Mm-hmm. But there's just so many more names that we can't even mention because they're a little bit further away.
Yeah, no, I mean, it is. You look at AA, and the team has Baez, Morahone, Markovicius, Reggie Lawson, Pedro Avila. Lower than that in high A.
Eleanor could, like, put out one of the best rotations that I've ever seen.
Yes, Lake Elsinore has Mackenzie Gore, Anderson Espinosa, Luis Patino, Osvaldo Hernandez, and Aaron Leisure, a couple of left-handed pitchers who are unheralded that would easily be top 30, top 15 players in another team's prospect list. But and then behind that, you have Weathers, you have Mason Thompson, Omar Cruz. I mean, the list goes on and on with these young players, and it's pretty phenomenal. The Padres have 15 pitchers, starting pitchers, that should at least be major league pitchers at some point. I don't know whether or not they're going to be able to be successful or whether or not they're going to transition into the bullpen or what, but all of these names should at least at some point be given an opportunity to be a major league pitcher. I mean, when you're talking about Morahone at 20 years old and pitching in Double A, there's upside there, and he will get a chance eventually to pitch in the major league. So it's exciting. It really is. It's pretty amazing for a team that had just no prospect talent pool to name. I know that they were number one ranked in 2012 or 13 or 14, something like that. But it didn't have the quality and the amount of depth that this system has right now. And it's incredible.
Yeah. And, you know, we talk about taking guys slow. We were talking about pushing the gas with guys like Fernando. A guy that they seem to kind of lay off the gas a little bit just because of his injury history is Chris Paddock.
Yes.
What is like the plan for Chris Paddock? Is he, because I know he's not going to be up for a while. He's already 23 years old. He's a large human being, by the way. Very, very tall. Yeah. I'm 5'5", and I would not like to have to be like, excuse me, sir, like, can you answer my question? But what is the deal for Chris Paddock? I mean, this is just such a crowded group. I mean, if we're talking about pitchers, he's number 5 on ESPN's for the entire Padres system. What makes him better, do you think, in their eyes than guys like Baez and Allen?
It's just his overall makeup, everything. Well, first off, his changeup is already major league quality. It would already be...
All I've heard is it's legendary.
Yeah, it would probably be a top 5, top 10 changeup in all of baseball right now at this point, just in his changeup alone. His velocity has increased slowly after the injury. He's up to mid-90s now, and we all know that if you can spot a fastball and arm that with a changeup, you're pretty much unhittable. And then you look at his innings pitched last season. He had 90 innings pitched last season, and he walked 8 batters.
That's 8 batters. Amazing.
And he struck out 120 in that time. So his numbers are Bugs Bunny-like. There's a lot to like with him. There's a lot of – I've spoke to him briefly. Haven't really had the opportunity to really talk to him like I wish. I missed him in Lake Elsinore a couple times that I had an opportunity to sit down with him. But from what I've gathered and what I've heard, he's got that it factor, that Franmil Reyes factor that we talked about, the factor that he wants to be better than his counterparts. He wants to be the best ever. He has that type of – mentality, and that's what you want to see from a young pitcher. He's ace type of pitcher. It's hard to throw that label out there, but he has ace type of ability. He should be in the major leagues at some point in 2019, depending on whether or not they want to take it easy or not, take it easy with him or not. But his ERA and his numbers actually improved last season from being promoted from Lake Elsinore to San Antonio. So there's no reason to believe that he will not excel in El Paso and be knocking on the door in a matter of months.
I'm going to sit here. I'm going to give you like a little, like a minute break, because I'm going to sit here and talk about my favorite person in this entire system. And it's obviously a popular opinion. Mackenzie Gore is amazing. And you just talked about, you know, the Franmil Reyes.
Mackenzie Gore.
Yeah, exactly. Franmil Reyes, we just talked about his his attitude, right? You know, how he is, how he attacks, you know, how his mindset is. Mackenzie seems to have the same mindset. Like, from everything that I've heard about him, he wants to be the best pitcher in this entire system and probably ever. We've finally gotten through the blister issues. That was a big thing for him. I think we all know that with McKenzie. Because when you have pitches with that much movement, if you don't have the right mechanics and you're not holding it correctly, like, you're going to blister up. Now that he's gotten through that, you've already passed an obstacle, like a guy like Rich Hill that will never do so. So that's one less obstacle that won't be in his way. You now have this ability with all of these pitches that he has. And Dave and I talk about it all the time. I don't care if you throw 100. I don't care if you throw 200. If you don't have movement on it, eventually people are going to adjust to it. And they're going to get used to it. And they're going to start hammering it. Mackenzie Gore isn't going to have that problem, because all of his fastballs and everything like that have movement. And that is going to be so deadly for him. And I think that's part of the reason that I think he's going to be so good when he finally gets up there and be this franchise's ace.
Yeah, no, I agree. The fastball velocity and movement on his pitches are pretty phenomenal. I mean, he can spot both his four-seamer and two-seamer exceptionally well. And then the mix of changeup and curve and slider, I mean, he's one of those players that has it, all of it. I mean, there's the
feels
the
like Grinke's coming up like as a prospect all over again with all of these pitches that he has and the spot on, yeah. Like the control.
You know, fans were a little upset last season. Well, not, I shouldn't say upset. They were a little perturbed that he wasn't developing like they wanted. I guess they wanted to see those Chris Paddock type numbers from him. But you're talking about a then 19-year-old kid. First time away from home, a quiet kid, North Carolina guy, trying to figure things out, working with the blister issues, trying to get through that mentality, trying to get through the fact that baseball isn't coming as easy as he'd like. And I think that he showed that he has the characteristics to become a better player and become a better pitcher from this. You know, we learn more in this game from failure. You learn more from failure. You learn more from defeat. You learn more from the adversity that you have to gain and to get better. And that's, this 2018 season is just going to make him and propel him into the next level. And he should start in Lake Elsinore, but at 20 years of age, with the Padres' reputation of moving up pitchers that are performing well, I wouldn't be surprised to see him at Double A at some point in 2019. And I know that you would be excited to see that yourself.
You will get a long, very probably all caps text at just how excited I am. But you know, you talked about this game that teaches through failure. This is a game that if you fail 7 out of 10 times, I mean, you're a good hitter.
Hall of Famer.
You're a Hall of Famer. Like, baseball is one of the few sports that you're allowed to fail. You know, if you're a quarterback and you're only completing 30% of your passes, I hate to break it to you, but you're not a quarterback very long. You know, and it just keeps going. I mean, basketball's even gotten to that point where you have to shoot more than 40%, almost 50% from the field to even be able to play anymore. And baseball is very unique like that. And that's part of the reason that I love it so much, is that you're allowed to fail. It's one of the few games in all of sports that you're allowed to fail and it be okay.
Yep, exactly. And it's about how you react to that failure, which makes you who you are. And again, that's what mirrors life, really. I mean, because if everything was positive in life, life wouldn't be very fun, wouldn't it? It would just be boring. So you have to have the negatives in order to have the positive. So we just got to just chug along, right?
What do we think the biggest obstacle for Mackenzie is going to be coming up?
I think probably getting over the physical thing, his finger issue. We spoke to him briefly at the end of the season when the Padres had a futures game out here in San Diego, and he indicated that he was over it, but that he had a little bit of hesitation and kind of being able to go full strength and have a full productive season. So we'll have to see. An interesting thing about McKenzie, which I love, is that he and Luis Patino are really, really good friends. Patino, his English is absolutely amazing over the past year.
He's so young too. Was he not like that when he got there? I mean, apparently it sounds like he developed it really fast.
Patino, yeah, no, he was, he's 19. The English came on really fast, like Franmil did. You know, the Padres offer in spring training, offer English classes to a lot of the prospects. They offer English transition courses, you know, trying to get them accustomed to life in the States. Immediately, you know, Padres players will go to Indiana, Fort Wayne, which is kind of a culture shock to a lot of these young Dominican, Venezuelan type players. So they've done well in preparing them for that. But it's about mentality because, you know, I'll talk to major leaguers that don't necessarily take that initiative to speak English. But at the same time, some of these prospects really take that to heart and really want to better themselves and want to further their communications, and it's about fear, I think, more than anything. I think Franmil and I have had this discussion a lot because I'm pretty fluent in Spanish, but I need to practice a little more. So he and I kind of talk about that from time to time, and he tells me that I need to get over the fear, and it's the same thing with these Latin players. They need to get over the fear of making an incorrect word or incorrect statement, and no one's going to make fun of you. It's about the effort that you give, and it's about communication, and I admire these Latin players that put forth that effort, and it bodes well to their future in the game, if you ask me.
Yeah, and you know, we just talked about, you know, that fear. I mean, Yoenis Cespedes still has that fear to this day. Like, he will refuse to speak English to the media, because I think that is a big deal. I mean, you have to understand that
a lot of them have pride. I mean, they have pride, and
yeah,
they're, you know, it's tough to judge, but you just got to be not afraid to make the mistakes. Your English is going to be broken. I mean, that's just what it is.
It's not your first language. Like,
yeah, exactly. And again, I don't hold anything back from a player who doesn't take the initiative to speak English, but I do like that, and I do think that it tells me that they're taking their craft seriously. It tells me that they want to go beyond just being a ball player, that they want to better themselves in all around it, in every aspect of the game. Because if you can communicate with a white guy from North Carolina and be good friends like Gore and Patino are, that's awesome. I mean, what other way is a guy from Venezuela, a teenager from Venezuela, going to meet a kid from North Carolina and become good friends and grow up together? And that's awesome. That's what baseball's about, bringing cultures together and making this world a better place, right, Austin?
Yes, sir. I mean, baseball is how it's basically brought us together at this point.
Yeah, seriously.
Yeah, so, all right, so we talked about a while ago, probably, it'll be probably another episode ago, that about the McKenzie-Gore trade, but the Francisco Mejia trade. Do you see something like that happening again with Kirby Yates this year that happened to Brad Hand last year? I know he doesn't have as much value, but he has the control that teams seem to want at this point.
Yeah, Yates came on with his split finger last season, so a pitch that he kind of developed, and it's really took him to the next level. I don't think that he's going to have the value that Hand has. I think Yates is only under control for the next two seasons. Hand had three when right. He was dealt, so there's definite, and just being a left-handed factor. I like Kirby Yates. I see the Padres potentially shopping him eventually because they have so many relief pitchers, so many potential closers. Andres Munoz, 20 years old, throws 102, 103 miles per hour. We haven't even talked about him. He should be up eventually. There's closers that are waiting in the wings for the Padres. You got Wynn Jenter, you got Stock, you got Castillo, who are capable of closing on the roster presently. So I can see the team potentially shipping Kirby Yates out for some more prospects or for someone who they deem as a viable piece for what they're looking for. It's tough to say. I don't know. I think that relief pitching is at a value right now than it's ever been. I mean, teams are realizing that if they can shorten a game in the sixth inning and put in two or three middle relievers, setup men, if you will, and then move on to your closer, that's just the formula that's just dominating right now.
They're playing playoff baseball in March now, in April now.
Yeah.
It's funny to me that nobody's ever thought of it, because obviously I'd never thought of it myself. But now, I mean, you have guys that are trying to shorten the game even more. Like, you have the Rays, who they don't let starters face the lineup more than twice, sometimes even once, if it's somebody like Sergio Romo. It's kind of crazy how baseball is evolving, and you have no choice but to evolve with it, or otherwise you wind up like the San Francisco Giants, caught in the past.
Yeah, exactly. This is an ever-evolving sport, and it's an ever-adjusting sport. The front office is the same as it's a microcosm of an actual at-bat. You need to adjust. You need to make amendments to your approach, and the winning franchises do that. And right now, relief pitching is at a premium, like we've discussed, and that seems to be the market that players are going with. I mean, you look at the Dodgers the last two seasons. If they had a better bullpen, they might have won a World Series, but they instead decided to go after certain players to, you know, it goes down to decision making, and it's hard to judge after the fact, but I think that it's safe to say that relief pitching is definitely at a premium right now, and the Padres have an excess amount of it, from Yates to Stammen, who's actually had decent numbers, who's a viable relief option, to some of the younger players that have crested the major leagues in the last year. I mean, right before the Rule 5 draft, they dealt Rowan Wick and Colton Brewer and got some pretty decent players in return for them. So AJ Preller is resourceful. He has his eye on everything, and you have to commend him for the fact that they do their due diligence, and they do leave no stone unturned.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of want to talk about this bullpen a little bit, just the fact that there is so many names. What is the bullpen look like? Like, if you had to structure it yourself, what would it look like in your opinion?
As far as closing and everything right now?
Like your 6, 7, 8, 9 guys. Yates closes, right? That's what, I mean, obviously.
Yeah, Yates would be the closer for sure. I mean, he's established himself, like I say, with the development of that split finger. He's really taken his game to the next level. But then you got players like Jose Castillo, left-handed pitcher, 23 years old, ridiculous slider, throws in the upper 90s, is more than capable of being a setup man. Stammen would also be considered a setup man as well. I would also throw Trey Wingenter in that mix. 24-year-old, 6'7", throws in the upper 90s, awesome arm, much upside with him. Robert Stock is a converted catcher who at the age of 29 came on last season and has, again, triple-digit fastball with a developing slider. You have Brad Wick, left-handed pitcher in the upper 90s, who's also capable of the bullpen. There's beyond that, there's in the minors, you have Andres Munoz, who I talked about, continually gets clocked over 102 miles per hour, which you don't see very often. Right-handed pitcher from Mexico, who's 20. Gerardo Reyes is another Mexican pitcher, 25 years old, three-quarters delivery, hard thrower, who was just added to the 40-man roster. You have Miguel Diaz, who was a Rule 5 pick a couple seasons ago, who has another top upper 90s fastball with phenomenal movement. This team has, their strength is the pitching. It's just that they're young. When you talk about the Lauer, Lucchese's, the Knicks, the Kennedys, the Stroms, the Paddocks, the Quantrills, the Allen, I mean, those are all players that are 25 and under that we have yet to see their true ability. We've yet to see the upside. We've yet to see what they can do in the major league. So there's a lot of enigmas. There's a lot of questions and, it's exciting. It's exciting if you're a Padre fan, because you don't know who's going to establish themselves and who's going to fall on their face. And that's pretty much what baseball is about, right? I mean, next year at this time, we could be talking about a whole different group of pitchers and not even mention three or four of the names that we just went through.
Yes, sir. And I mean, there's only one more thing that we really have to talk about. I need you to pitch me Fred McGriff to the Hall of Fame.
Oh, Fred McGriff to the Hall of Fame. Let's see. Consistency. There's no steroid implications involved with Mr. McGriff. You're looking at 19 years with an OPS of 886, 134 OPS plus, 377 on-base percentage, 493 home runs, just seven short of the magical 500 mark. He produced a 52.6 WAR in that time. I think what's most valuable to think about McGriff when you look at his WAR, at 52.6 in 19 years isn't very impressive, but when you look at his defense, he had almost 18 points taken away from his defense. He wasn't a quality or a plus defender, so that took away from his offensive ability. I heard a stat today. He was top five in OPS for seven straight years. I mean, those are numbers that are pretty phenomenal. Definitely, I mean, if Harold Baines can make it to the Hall of Fame, Fred McGriff definitely deserves consideration.
What a wild move, by the way, that Harold Baines gets in the Hall of Fame.
I mean, I'm an old school guy. I'm 42 years old. I remember watching Baines play as a child and as a teenager. Good player. I don't know. I mean, I understand he had numbers taken away from strike seasons and stuff like that. They probably would have put him to 3,000 hits, but I don't know. It's a different generation. You know, everyone has their favorite players and their players that they like, so I don't necessarily want to say too much negativity about Harold Baines. It's probably not who I would have selected, but, you know, it is what it is. I can definitely see an argument for him, and that's what baseball's all about, right? I mean, it's about arguing numbers and arguing stats and arguing players' worth, and nobody's right and everybody's wrong.
And you know, it's hard seeing a guy that you idolized growing up. Mine's actually on the ballot right now, and it's not what everybody thinks it is. If they've listened to the show, they know exactly who it is. I love.
Let me guess. Michael Young.
It is. I mean, yeah. I mean,
I think you and I have talked about this.
We have between Michael and Chipper and Eckstein, like guys yeah. like that. I mean, I have a type, obviously, but you know, it's hard seeing Michael Young on the ballot, and the only votes that he's probably going to get are Dallas Riders. But at the end of the day, people have to realize what he meant to the Ranger organization. He's not a baseball Hall of Famer. He's not, and I understand that. And people need to understand that about their own players. I mean, now if your favorite player is Barry Bonds or if it's Mark McGwire, like, you have a completely different argument, and that's a whole nother podcast. Like, that is a whole conversation. I mean, I grew up a Longhorn fan. You know, I talked about Corey Knebel today, you know, talking about Longhorns. Talked to Michael Cantu actually today, this morning. You know, Roger Clemens, probably the best Longhorn pitcher of all time. And that's a whole conversation, steroid issue. But McGriff didn't have those problems. And I agree 100%. I think Fred McGriff should be in the Hall of Fame. You know, I mean, I don't know if this is controversial. I think Fred McGriff should be in the Hall of Fame before Larry Walker is.
Yeah, I can agree with that. I wasn't a huge Walker fan myself. I mean, it is what it is. But that's what the beauty of baseball is, because you can make an argument, and nobody's right. I mean, there's just no way to justify it. You can sit here till you're blue in the face. Only in rare exceptions where a person is like a first ballot Hall of Famer. You look at Tony Gwynn, that's a first year Hall of Famer.
It's Gwynn, Rivera, Jeter, guys like that.
Yeah, I mean, I could even, being a San Diego Padre fan, I could even see the argument as Hoffman not being a Hall of Famer.
Yeah, I didn't understand.
I can respect someone's opinion and understand what they're saying. I don't necessarily agree with it, but I can understand where they're coming from. And in the end, he became a Hall of Famer, and that's what the correct choice was in my estimation. But
yeah, you could sit here and say without the longevity that there was at points in his career to where he's better than Rivera.
Yeah, exactly.
And I loved watching Trevor, obviously, being a Red Sox fan. There was nothing I hated more than hearing Inner Sandman coming out of the bullpen. But, I mean, Trevor Hoffman's a guy that I didn't see the blowback, that I didn't agree with some of the blowback that it got. I thought he should get in just absolutely 100%. my argument was always, if you put Rivera in first ballot, I think Trevor needs to go in first ballot because they walked hand in hand together most of their careers.
Yeah, yeah. And it's tough. They obviously play for totally different franchises in totally different sides of the country. So you can't compare the two to each other, but the numbers don't speak. I mean, we're getting into Hoffman talk here, but Hoffman was pretty incredible. I mean, the guy had towards the tail
so
end of his
many
career
pitches
had a,
too.
Well, I mean, it was just fastball and changeup, and he was throwing 90 to 91 miles per hour towards the end of his career, but his changeup was 70, 75 miles per hour.
It's the greatest changeup in baseball history, in my opinion.
It is.
Because he had the ability to make it look like three different pitches at some points.
Yeah. Well, he would talk about that. He would throw like a bad changeup and then throw a good one right afterwards and just get the guys just turn into a – just screw themselves into the ground. And it's just a thing of beauty. Yeah, I loved watching him pitch. When batters knew the changeup was coming, they still couldn't hit it, and then he'd sneak a fastball by them too. And it's the art of pitching, and that's what is beautiful about it. You don't have to throw 100 miles per hour, as long as you are locating your pitches and getting that batters out. That's all that matters.
And you know, we just talked about one of the greatest changeups ever. Glavin's another one. I mean, these guys, yeah. Nobody throws the ball the same way. There is a textbook form, and obviously I think Smoltz is the closest that we'll ever get to, like, textbook. But mm-hmm. Nobody throws the ball the same way. Like, I enjoyed a big one for me, and I think he should be a Hall of Famer, and I think he's going to be as Doc Holliday. Like, Roy Halladay was the most – if when I was growing up, I wanted to pitch like Roy Halladay. I don't know what it was. It was there was just something about how smooth it was, how great he was, how many pitches he did it with. But everybody has preferences, and nobody throws the ball the same. And it's amazing to me that we watch a sport every single day that we can go from guys like Paul Molitor to guys like Ricky Weeks in their routines and their stances. I mean, Ricky slings the bat around like Gary Sheffield, probably even more so. And you have Molitor, who I don't think that if you like had a video of him, the only way you would know is if people were moving around him.
Yeah.
It's just amazing to me that we live in a sport that has so many different things that can happen and so many different stances, so many different pitches even. I mean, yeah. Nobody throws a fastball the same way, if we're being honest. Like, everybody has a different degree of movement, you know?
Well, now the launch angle thing is so huge right now with everyone trying to uppercut the ball and drive the ball. The four-seam fastball is going to be the pitch of the next generation, the next couple of seasons. You just watch. Players are going to be pitchers in particular are going to be just learning that pitch because you can't get under a four-seam fastball, a high-rising fastball. And that's contradictory to what we would learn before. Like, don't pitch up in the zone. A player's going to take you deep. But if everyone's trying to uppercut the ball, you can't do it on a high fastball. So, and again, that goes back to changing and the evolution of the game. I mean, splitters used to be such a huge popular thing, and now you don't see very many people throwing them. And it changes, and it's ever evolving and it's ever growing, and it's about making these changes. And that's why it's kind of scary giving out a 8 to 10 year contract to a player who can be kind of stubborn and not necessarily want to change their approach at the plate or the way they attack hitters. So I can definitely understand the trepidation in getting too invested in some of these guys long term. It's got to be the right type of person, right?
But you're starting to see. You're starting to see people like the older guys. They're not getting the contracts that they used to.
Mm-mm.
I mean, they're the 26 and 27 year olds and 28 year olds are getting it. You're not going to see like I would be very surprised if Dallas Keuchel winds up with longer than a 3 year deal. You don't yeah. see it anymore.
And no,
it's getting younger.
What drives me crazy is the player opt outs that Scott Boras and his.
He's the best at his job, unfortunately.
Oh, my God. These player opt-outs just drive me insane because I don't know. I mean, baseball already has guaranteed contracts. They have the best union in all the land. There, you look at football and the injustices that they have to go through, and it just drives me wild that you're going to sign a player to a 10-year contract, and then after 3 years they can opt out because they want more money. It Like, where's the 10-year deal for a team where they can opt out after three? What can the Padres opt out after Eric Hosmer after last season? I mean, I know that that's not the system that we have in front of us, and it's probably not fair to the players, but it drives me wild that these opt outs that they have. Well,
and now we're talking about these Harper contracts. There's talk that a Harper contract could have three or four player opt outs.
Yeah, that's what I'm hearing. Yeah, after 2 years or 3 years, just so that make sure that he's making $40 million or $50 million,
making sure
or whatever
that he's making the market is what that's for.
Essentially, that's what it is, and it's crazy. I don't know.
And you know what sucks is that when that player does start to decline, which this was my fear. I'm the biggest David Price like protector in the world, honestly. Like, I will protect David Price to my grave. I know he's an egotistical maniac. I know this, that. I was very scared that when the David Price contract was signed, that if he declined, you know, he was going to accept his opt-in and just hate Boston for the rest of his career and make the Red Sox pay him $30 million for the rest of his career. Luckily, he's turned the tide a little bit, and the only person that he can't seem to beat is, you know, the only team that seems that we really hate in the New York Yankees, but he can beat everybody else, so it's just fine, and, you know, the contract looks pretty good right now.
Baseball's funny like that. Players' values go up and down, their motivation
like daily, honestly.
Yeah, seriously. It's like the weather in the Midwest. Just wait long enough and it'll change. And there's no right answer. There's no wrong answer. That's why we love the sport, right? I mean, it's hard to configure a winning team, and the chemistry aspect is something that there's no analytical stat for.
Yeah, and it's crazy because, you know, you think about the past, and there was a point to where, you know, people thought Delmon Young was like the next big thing, you know?
Yeah.
And then a year or two later, it's like Delmon Young couldn't get a job anywhere. Ian Kinsler, there was stretches in his career where he's the best second baseman in baseball. Like, you know, it was him, Robinson Cano, guys like that. And now he's taking a deal with the Padres to, you know, fill a spot. You know, it's just crazy to me, just the fluctuation in value. And I think that's why stats are thriving so much, is because of the diversity and how different things are on a daily basis in baseball, to where you have football where you play once a week.
Yeah, exactly. It's the grind of the season is wearing on players, and I don't think a lot of the fans quite understand that it's just a continuous grind on them. There's no family time. There's no time for themselves. It's a job. It really is a job. It might be something that they're overpaid at and that they make a comfortable living at, but it's a grind, and it can be tough on some of them. And the mental part of the game is definitely trying for some players.
That's the other thing, though. It's like, you know, everybody's talking about Harper and Machado. Like, oh, is he worth $35 million? The question is, the answer is nobody's worth $35 million. Like, yeah. nobody is worth what they're getting paid to play a game. It's, you just have to understand the fact that they're going to get what they're going to get. It's not your money, and just step out of the way.
Yeah, it'll blow your mind if you think about it. When you think about Zach Greinke and Clayton Kershaw next year making $1 million per start, it'll blow your mind.
They make more in contracts than, like,
yeah,
than one, a small town will in their entire lives.
Exactly. In one 2.5-3 hour game where they pitch it, they're making more than most Americans will ever make in their whole lifetime. So it's kind of crazy, but that's just the economics of the sport and what it is. So we just try to figure it out, which is pretty much impossible.
Kind of give me a top five, and this is how we'll end it. The top five people that you're most excited to see in the system this year.
Top five. Young players, minor league players. I think Tatis would have to be number one, just to see what he's capable to do in a hitting ballpark like El Paso. I would expect to see him just perform like crazy in the PCL, which is a notorious hitters league. I'm excited to see your boy Mackenzie Gore in a healthy 2019 and see what kind of numbers that he can put up. There's a couple of minor leaguers that aren't talked about very often. Owen Miller is one who was a draft pick last season, who really just excelled. By the end of the year, he was playing in Double A for the playoffs for the Missions, and he started in Arizona in the extended. Young infielder, can play short, third, first, second, line drive type hitter. But I've talked to him a couple times. He's another player who has that advanced it factor, who just wants to be better, wants to get better. Tucapito Marcano is a fun name and someone who's really come on. 18-year-old infielder, shortstop, is probably start the season in Fort Wayne, but will be exciting to see if whether or not he can keep up the momentum that he had. Tirso Ornelas is someone that I'm also very excited. Played last season at Fort Wayne, was a little bit injured. He's 18, will be 19 once the season starts, but left-handed Mexican player, outfielder, exceptional power, plus bat, pretty swing. I could just go on and on. Siri Ruiz is another one I'm excited about. Hudson Potts, another one. Buddy Reed in Double A with Amarillo is also exciting to see what he can do. The system is stacked, and you can pretty much look at any team and find something exciting to watch about anybody. I mean, there's a lot of young players on this team. It's a good time to be a Padre fan as long as you can remain patient through this 2019 season.
The podcast you just heard was made using Anchor. Ever thought about making your own podcast? Anchor makes it really easy for anyone to get started. It's a one-stop shop for recording, hosting, and distributing podcasts. Best of all, it's 100% free. Sign up now at anchor.fm/new. That's anchor.fm/new to get started.